systems for treading the path, systems for reaching the mountaintop. Remember always what your function is as a person on the path. The mountain of initiation, is the symbol of your attempt to reach the highest realms of expression in the esoteric. There are two paths up the mountain. The long one that winds around the foothills and is easy and goes around the back of the mountain and twists again and again and enables you to reach up to the top in 777 lives. It's a symbolic number, but close. And that is ordinary man on the path of unfoldment. No hurry, no pressure, normal, domestic, upsets, nothing else. But if you want to shorten the process, if you feel that you really can't stand these dreadful reincarnations in which you yourself are involved in adolescence, going through adolescence yet again and again, and you decide that you would like to serve mankind in a more expressive way, then for you, the mountain path. Not the winding path around the mountain, but up the cliff face, You are asking to take a very, very difficult journey. And the difficult journey is going to take you right up the cliff face to the top. You're just like a mountaineer. For you, there would have to be exercises. If you're going to be a mountaineer, you'd be a fool if you did not get your muscles right for the work in hand. You would be a greater fool if you did not equip yourselves as the mountaineer does with his implements, with his axe, with his rope. And so the analogy holds good there too. You need to equip yourselves. Equip yourselves in certain capacities, like this very simple one I've just given you, postures. And if you add to that the bellows breath, you're knocking on the gates of heaven. And so you equip yourself, be prepared for the great exertions that lie ahead and the demands made on you. The demands of those beings who are high up on the mountain and can throw you a rope and help you. I shall want the book with the river and the rope in later on. This is what spiritual unfoldment is all about. All the time, man has free will. He has free will. By that, he is able to drop out any time he wishes. He is able to refuse a discipline. My experience is that the higher you get on the mountain path, the less free will there really is. On the surface, there appears to be free will. But the higher you climb on the mountain, the greater your responsibilities. You are responsible for the heart chakra of your community. You are part of it. You are responsible for the destiny of your race, for the future of mankind, depending on how high you reach. And those responsibilities are inalienable. The alternative is to pull out, to alienate yourself from the great ones, to stay on the mountainside where you are, perhaps slipping a little, and not have the view. the glorious view that comes from the cliff face. Staggering cosmic view. How could those little people down on the surface of the earth possibly know what's going on 20 miles away? What's about to happen in the way of a storm that is brewing? What is happening is likely to happen in the world from your higher viewpoint. And in practice, it is not very easy to alienate yourself from the higher nature. So, when we talk about treading the path, we choose the symbol of the mountain. We also use the esoteric symbol of it, which is Capricorn. Capricorn is the goat. Capricorn is the goat that makes extraordinary leaps on the mountain face, is able to take off from practically nothing, a base not bigger than a 20p piece. No, all right, 50p piece. And able to leap to the next position with ease and confidence. Being very prudent to be absolutely sure that it's going to do the right thing. Following its instincts. And all the other signs of the zodiac and their associated planets and houses have symbols. And if you want to talk to the higher self, if you want to talk to the higher self, you will first use one of the esoteric keys to the higher self. Whether it is numerology, whether it is astrology, whether it is physiology or occult anatomy is beside the point. If you want to see one evidence of one, you can see the key that Swedenborg used. The Swedenborgians don't talk about it. They don't know anything about the esoteric as far as they're concerned. Swedenborg's just another form of Jesus, and that's it. But Swedenborg chose a key in which he made God a huge man, a leviathan. And in this great leviathan he placed all living things, and they were part of this great being. We're not talking about Swedenborg this afternoon. What we're talking about is the way, a system for going up the mountain face, going up the mountain face. In doing the work, the will of the higher self. Remember, as I said earlier, the higher self must use a personality in order to achieve movement in its own spiritual evolution. And so, life after life, a personality is used. There is incarnation and there is the coming out of incarnation. Bearing the talents of the prodigal son, bearing the talents back to the Father in heaven. And so by this method, the soul evolves, and that's what you have in mind when you undertake a system. And you can sum this up by saying that it is up to you to be more spiritual, to be more spiritual. Now, all of us have suffered a Christian upbringing, so we don't know what spirituality means. My definition of spirituality is: it is the energy generated in the raising of the consciousness of those around you. Spirituality is the energy generated within your aura, within your soul, within your personality, which is generated by raising the consciousness of those around you. Has nothing to do with clerical robes, has nothing to do with power, or rank, anything except the raising of the consciousness of those around you. And by that we mean not only the humans around you, but the animals around you, and the plant kingdom around you, raising its consciousness. And if you like to take it to its utmost, there is the raising of the consciousness, assisting in the raising of the consciousness of immense beings. It's round the corner. It's round the corner. Mankind is going to enter the solar system, is going to change the planets, is going to change the consciousness of the indwelling Gaias or indwelling spirits of those planets. You've all been told, no matter what your religion or your philosophy, you've all been told that we have immense omnipotence. We have omnipotence available to us. There is nothing that exists that cannot be achieved by man in time. And so we shall do that. Now, in the process of spiritual unfoldment, there are many images used, and I'm going to start to use them now. Spiritual unfoldment involves the raising of your consciousness. We've just said it. And by that we mean that on a very thick rod of etheric material called sushumna, there grow, like flowers on a stalk, certain chakras. I'm going to do them head on. Certain chakras. And these chakras are placed strategically in association with endocrine glands. And we say that there are 7 of them in an advanced person, 5 of them in a person not yet treading the path. There are 7 points in this on the spine, but not all of them are functioning. Only in highly advanced man, in a master of the wisdom, do all 7 of them function. 3 of them, from our point of view here, are below the diaphragm. That's the most critical structure in the body as regards breathing and the obtaining of prana. The diaphragm is responsible for 60% of your breath. 60%. You ask an English child to breathe. Say, breathe in, breathe out. That's the way they're taught. In fact, the diaphragm should occupy 60% of the movement of the increase in the chest. And see your kids use it. Really. If you've got children, bring them up properly. So, spiritual unfoldment is a gradual process. Here's the heart chakra. Slightly to the left, above the diaphragm. There's the throat chakra. And this is a region unknown to ordinary man from the point of view of arousing his energies. It is a place of concern for the man on the path, a place of concern for the disciple. So we talk about the way in which man transfers energies to his higher chakras. And that's what it's all about. The difficulty is in the West that the energies from these chakras are either defective, so that we can't deal with stress, can't deal with persistent mental conflict, can't deal with emotional demands of domestic life, can't deal with meditation, because we're not getting the energies up to the higher centers. The matter is further complicated by the fact that there is a proper pathway for the energies. The solar plexus chakra, just below the diaphragm, coinciding almost with the navel, is the site of emotion. And in spiritual unfoldment, you are supposed to sublimate this energy into a higher energy which the heart cries out for. So we talk about sublimating our attachments in the world. It's my car, leave it alone. You're my wife. I love you. And if you don't love me back, I'll tear your jugular vein out. And that's the kind of emotional structure this chakra, the solar plexus center, gives out. And in your spiritual practices, you have to change the quality of that energy so that it can enter the region of the heart chakra and assist that poor organ in man that is under tremendous pressure. Now, the way that that is done is by what we call sublimation. Sublimation. And by sublimation, we mean the control of the libido. By libido in the esoteric, we mean that from the astral world, there comes pouring into the astral body of man a gigantic crude energy, a gigantic crude energy called the libido. And that libido will rush around here below the diaphragm. It will try and get expression as sex in the sacral center. It will try and arouse the kundalini fire that resides at the base of the spine and generally produce havoc in that individual, so that although he has lots of energy as a personality, he is unwise, unloving, inactive, inefficient. And that is the libido. And so what we're trying to do is to change this energy so that the energies that are evolved out of it can be moved up to higher centers. And we call that sublimation. I'm going to read the definition, whether you can make head or tail of it. To overcome the libido by diverting it into non-sexual or higher activities and channels. Sublimation. So now we have the background to our system. We have the background to our system. Lying up here are incredible chakras awaiting to be aroused. One a little higher than the throat chakra, one in the space, the sacred square inch between the eyebrows, a chakra called Ajna, two-petal chakra, and a glorious chakra that is like an inverted lotus, the so-called thousand-petaled lotus, the crowning glory of man. And it is our need to push the energies upwards by spiritual disciplines to begin to feed these chakras so that they themselves can interact with each other and ultimately produce the so-called nimbus around a sainted individual. Yoga is still the best process known in the world. I must pay it its due, but it needs to be carefully adjusted for man in the West. What does this mean? It means psychosynthesis. You can't mess around with this. You can't start visualizing elephants trumpeting as a symbol of one of the chakras, or crocodiles yawning as another symbol. Just ain't us, is it? Just ain't us. And so I adopted a system, basically, it's not the total system, but one that I have used, taught, which was put together by an Italian called Assagioli. I went to stay with him in my time at university and learned a lot from him. And his method is psychosynthesis. Psychosynthesis. And what he means by that is learning to put all this together so that it can be an instrument of spirituality and expression of the spiritual. Let us now, very quickly before we start there, consider something that I have held always paramount in this work. Not that we must live in this world less, but that we should live in both worlds more. Not that we should come into incarnation here amongst this very busy, bustling nation called England, and then immediately take steps to go and hide ourselves in a hamlet in Scotland, never seeing anybody again. That we must somehow function in this world as good, honest citizens, working out our karma, carrying out our obligations or dharma, and yet, despite all that, penetrating into the other world, the subjective world, and learning from its ways what we should do. Not that we should live in this world less, but that we should live in both worlds more. That's the challenge. That's the challenge of esoteric unfoldment. So what do? You change your life. You change your life. Some people do it very gently, not telling their husbands, which is very wise indeed. Because his fear is that you're trying to change his. You do it quietly. And if it helps you, do it objectively by starting a spiritual diary. On Friday, I'm going to start my spiritual diary. Make the resolution, stick by it. You buy your manuscript book, single line manuscript book, and on Friday you start off. Waking dream. Put the date down, waking dream. Describe it. Don't analyze it. Don't analyze it. Never analyze your dreams in your diary. Just record it. Because later in years to come you're going to look back at that. And you're going to see what meaning it really did have. And how the higher self was trying to tell you things from a very early date. So you start off the spiritual diary on the Friday, and at the same time you decide that you're going to move every limb in your body to help mankind where it's possible. And the ways that I'm now going to suggest will be ways in which you can do things for humanity which you can report in your diary, no matter how inconsequential it may seem. Remember, we are not looking for results. We're not looking for results. You wouldn't know whether there was a result anyway, no matter how much you had failed. You would not know what that was in terms of your karma, in terms of whether you're going to live longer or less in this life. Right, so we take certain things in our lives. We examine ourselves. And we take certain things like intolerance, and by intolerance. And so we begin to practice tolerance. We begin to practice tolerance. We take into ourselves, much as we hate it perhaps in the beginning, we take into our nature the capacity to live with aliens in the country. The capacity to deal with changes in diet. Changes in attitude. That's the hardest thing of all, is to change your attitudes. They're always found in the first house in astrology, the attitudes. And they are very, very difficult to alter. But my God, when you start to change your attitudes, what difference you will experience in your subjective life. What glorious new views will be given you from that mountain of initiation. Where there is suspicion, you of course need to develop trust. You need to develop trust. People often say to me, Douglas, how can you trust people like you do when you know that they're going to let you down? My answer to that is, if I can't trust people in this world, I don't want to be here. Really, life is not worth it if you're going to be amongst the whole world, and the whole world cannot be trusted. Trust and goodwill. Goodwill, and so is suspicion. In the place of suspicion, goodwill. Nice word, suspicion. I can't spell on the blackboard for some reason or the other. Trust. Goodwill. Goodwill, do you know where goodwill can be employed, used as a service to man? Join the World Goodwill Movement, founded by Alice Bailey. It has its headquarters in London. You can ask, write to them, ask for the papers. They'll send you back a package. And in it, you'll be invited to appoint two other members to form a triangle with you. They can be in Australia, anywhere in the world, and those two individuals align with you. And each day, you call them up in your mind, in your higher mind. You call them up and you exchange energy with them. You see them as points of light. Always remember another occult maxim. Energy follows thought. Energy follows thought. And if you want to help in the world, think of those who are ill. Think of them. Visualize them. And even as you visualize them, energy will flow from you to them. And so, well, goodwill movement. Don't worry about its occult significance. It's to do with these triangles that interlace the whole of the planet and create an extra supporting etheric body to the planet, a body of goodwill. So, the next, impatience to patience. Impatience. Well, you know, the kids are impatient today, aren't they? They want results immediately. And the moment you teach them something, they're off at a tangent, trying to get all that they can from it. Well, they're the kind of people that need to be told, especially the kids that have been on drugs. And they come to you, I can't get any results. You've been on drugs? Yes. Well, I'm not surprised you're not getting results. You grabbed. You wanted to grab things out of the spiritual kingdom. So you took drugs and got a preview of the spiritual kingdom. Now you have to pay for it. You've gone and torn some of your etheric webs. You either have to do special breathing exercises in this life, which may not be, bring results for another three or four lives. Ooh, they don't like that. But if they survive that and they patiently get down to repairing their etheric body, it can work. And they ask my advice, I say, I can't give you advice. Why can't you give it? I demand advice from you. My answer to that is, the only teaching I know is for average, ordinary people who have not touched drugs. Once you touch drugs, then you need a completely different system. A system that will take into account imperfections that have not been known to spiritual men on the path. And I therefore can't give you the kind of prescription that I would give an ordinary person. Didn't want to get involved in that, but we were talking about patience. People need to understand that you may be given a meditational technique that may not bring a result for many lives. You can imagine how popular that is in the esoteric world. you'll find that your ashram is empty. Everybody wants instant spirituality. And then there is childishness, silliness. Really, it means lack of, I'll just put it down, silliness. It really means lack of relevance, lack of relevance, silliness. You go to your life, you're desperate for time, desperate. You need time for your meditation, you need time to write your spiritual diary, you need to get yourself up in the middle of the night so that you sleep more lightly, and in that time you begin to read your occult classics. You have to spend time adapting your attitudes towards all sorts of things that Baker was talking about. And so you're pressed for time. But what do you find? You find that such individuals are messing around with birthday cards, sending out Christmas cards. Oh, I got 100 Christmas cards this year. Now, what did she send that Christmas card to me for? I suppose I've got to get her one back now. Woolworths is still open. You rush into Woolworths and you get the card and mail it as quick as you can. Keeping birth dates of the family. Why? Which family? Which of the 600 lives? Which family? Total irrelevance. Cut them out of your life. Cut them out. Novels, you're not on the path if you've got time to read novels, I'll tell you that. If you're on the path, I'm on the freeway. And so you cut out the irrelevances in your life. A sign of spiritual immaturity. There you are. Spiritual immaturity, that's what it is, a sign of spiritual immaturity. I'll tell you something else which points to spiritual immaturity, is when people make mistakes and blame them onto others. They get involved in some job they can't handle, and instead of accepting the fact that they are immature, unable to manage, they blame others around them. Now that's a sign of spiritual immaturity. Then there are those that have been brought up with the belief that they must look after number one. Number one is themselves. Their mother told them, listen, my son, the first thing that you do when you grow up is you look after number one. That's you. And to that we say, that's kind of separativeness. That kind of separativeness has to be overcome. Separativeness, divisiveness. How can you say, when you share the same etheric form as other mankind, how can you say that you are not part of them? Well, from the higher worlds, that is known as divisiveness or divisiveness. Learn to practice oneness, learn to practice holism. Holism is the totality of you, your astral form, your spiritual nature, your capacity to exert will. All those are you, so that when you come up against the first threat, you don't run away. You don't run away because you know you have access to a will that is incomprehensible to ordinary man. And you know that will works. It's very closely allied to the physical body. And many athletes talk about how, coming in the last few yards of a race, how they report they were taken over by some sort of higher energy that got hold of them and drove them to that winning post, despite the carbon dioxide in their muscles, despite the lack of oxygen, and so on. Selfishness, you combat with altruism. altruism. Don't keep thinking about yourself. The first thing that happens when kids come into my ashram is they walk around like that, and we make signs to them like that, which means they can only see 15 inches in front of them. Very like what happens in the dream world, in the astral world, where you see only 15 inches in front of you, have no control over the dream. You don't know when you're going to meet the same person twice and so on. People walk around like that in this world. Try and expand yourself. The best formula is altruistic egotism. Write it down, altruistic egotism. The great endocrine man, Hansilie, talked about altruistic egotism. Not that you must throw your personality away. On the contrary, we're coming to that in a moment. But that you should synthesize it, put it together in such a way that you can be altruistically effective. You can help mankind. It's no good having a little creature that comes along that's avoided stress all its life, like my cat. My cat avoids stress. Finds places in the house when the Hoover's on the go and hides himself there. There are people in the world like that who hide away from stress and are unable to face up to it. They need to learn altruistic egotism.
Right.
Let's start to look at some of the symbols suggested of the process of psychosynthesis. What we're saying is this, that if you want to get up there, closer to where the soul is, you're going to have to do something with this personality of yours. The ideal personality is a personality that is rounded out. A personality that is rounded out. That's not going to let the hierarchy down the first moment there's any trouble. A personality that can be independent. A personality that can face up to loneliness. A personality that can cling on in the face of great opposition. A personality that can work in a group. And that's the hardest thing of all. We're entering the new age of groups. Don't think that any of you can make spiritual progress outside of a group. I'll promise you, you won't. You may think you are, but it will be valueless compared to what you would do in a group. And working in a group is very hard indeed. You have to adjust yourself to everybody in the group. And unfortunately, they're struggling to adjust themselves to you. And groups need brilliant leadership. And by using the psychology of the rays, we tend to choose additions to the group according to what rays we are lacking. It's no good having a group made up of a lot of second-ray people on the ray of love, wisdom, all teaching and healing each other. And nothing ever gets done. Can be very embarrassing, the esoteric. You know, I held a huge festival in Maidenhead, 1966, the year we had the hot summer, was it? 1976, sorry. The hot summer. And we had a night of healing, teaching healing, how to heal, various methods. We had three different classes working together. And I was in my office downstairs, struggling with all sorts of problems, and a message came through, Dr. Baker, all three lecturers are unable to come. They're all sick. Very embarrassing indeed. So we're talking about the necessity for having a rounded out personality. If you're going to make sacrifices, you need a personality that can stand it. The great example of this, of course, is Abraham and Isaac. And the Lord wanted Abraham to be totally integrated, trustworthy under all circumstances. And so the Lord came to Abraham and said, take your eldest son, Isaac, your most beloved son, Isaac. Take him up to the mountaintop, and there on the altar up there, I want you to sacrifice him. Abraham did not argue. He took his son up the mountain. There's the mountain. It was the mountain of initiation. This was one of his tests for initiation. So he took his son up there. The most beloved thing that he had in his personality life. There was nothing he loved any more better. He loved his son. He was attached to his son. But the question was, would he do this for the Father in heaven? So he laid the son out on the slab there, lifted the knife and was ready to plunge it into the son's chest when the hand of the Lord, an angel, stayed his hand. Lovely legend, talking about the necessity for a personality to be so integrated that it can take its dearest possession and sacrifice it. Strange subjects, these, concerned with integration of personality. Strange subjects indeed. There are many examples of personalities that have fallen by the wayside, unable to comply with the demands of the higher self. The higher self has to test you. Before it entrusts you with energies that you haven't the faintest idea of. Huge deluges of energy that can be passed through you and through you to mankind. So you have to be prepared for testing. How do we go about this? This has only got a miserable representation of the soul within it. It could carry much more energy if it was more spiritual, this unintegrated personality. The soul can feed into it about 5% of the energy possible. But if this begins to put itself together, if it begins not only to round itself out, but to begin to spin and then to radiate, then the higher self may pour an immense amount of energy into it, if it is prepared to do the higher self's work. So what we do in psychosynthesis is to dismember the personality. Now if you go to your psychiatrist, he'll tell you that that's the most horrifying thing that you can do from a psychiatric point of view. And it's for that reason that we always say with the esoteric, if you have a history of mental imbalance, if you are a person who is recovering from some severe condition, if you are a person that is not sure, don't do it. Leave this alone. Wait, go off and get yourselves absolutely right before you look at meditation or anything esoteric. That's my advice. So we say dismember the old personality. Throw out bits and pieces of it. Silliness. There they are. That's why I was making the list. Intolerance. Suspicion. That sort of thing. Toss them out. Even if you have to more or less break up this personality.